This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
And we are live here. We're waiting for our Instagram followers to join me as well. You're here live with Dr. Jeff Werber, your host for the next 30 minutes here on Pet Life Radio's Ask the Vet, Dr. Jeff. I am getting some of my IG friends to join me here. Good morning, good morning, good afternoon. I'm waving, waving. And so, as you know, the drill, we're here for you, here for your pets. Anything you want to talk about, now is the time. It's advice, it's free. Love to hear your thoughts about different things. Don't be embarrassed or afraid to ask questions, because that's why we're here. And I trust me, I say it all the time, that there's no doubt that anything that you think you want to talk about, even if you think it's weird, I've heard it before. And it's just one of those things. Also, as you know, I always have some things I like to talk about. I could start with some of the things that I wanted to talk about. JB, hello. So we talked about last week, I think if you missed it, about this weird person around in certain areas. There was an area of Southern California, Pasadena, and he was putting out poisonous foods in front of like doggy daycare facilities and rescue. I mean, it was like really weird. So people are pretty strange out there. So, you know, it's going to happen. So obviously, best thing to do is not let your dogs get a hold of eat things that they're not supposed to. Now, they have frozen treat cups for dogs. I start giving my 16 and a half year old dog once a week. I believe they are dairy free. Absolutely. Absolutely. First of all, even if they had a little dairy in them, it would be, you know, okay to do. So yeah, just remember one thing. When you give those kind of treats, they do have calories. So you want to make sure that if your dog is perfect in every other way, a little extra, like me, you know, once in a while having a hot fudge sundae, I'm going to do it. But am I going to have one every night? No, I would have a tough time getting up and off this chair if I was doing it every night. So the whole idea is that yes, for things like that, once in a while, it is totally fine. All right. And so yeah, I'm totally a fan. I thought this was really good. And we'll, you know, just until some other questions come in, we'll do this. It says human brain waves, all right, actually align with dog brain waves during friendly interactions. So it's something referred to as neural synchrony. They get together, or interbrain coupling is what it basically means. So that means that it's highest, listen to this, when dogs and humans gaze at each other simultaneously. So it doesn't happen the same when you're looking at them, or but they're not looking back, or they're looking at you, but you're not meeting. But when your eyes meet, that synchrony is at its highest level. I mean, come on, don't you know? I mean, I'm sure all of us that have wonderful relationship with our pets, our dogs especially, that you almost feel that they, just by looking at them, that they know what you're thinking and you know what they're thinking. And I think that is, it's so cool. But that's exactly what is going on. There's actually science behind it. And it is it's called neural synchrony. And our brain waves actually can meet and, in a sense, communicate. And I always said that dogs have an uncanny, I say this to my clients all the time, that dogs seem to be able to read us better than we can read them. How many times as a veterinarian do I get dogs coming in my office? And I hear this all the time. It's not just once in a while. First time I started hearing, oh, yeah, 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 funny, funny, that they say, oh my God, my dog, I can't believe he's letting you do that. I can't believe that you're petting him. I mean, he's tried to bite every veterinarian he's been. So it's something about these dogs, and they can actually read and respond to, I don't know, I think it's an energy, it's an aura, but they sense it. They sense it. And for whatever reason, they feel really comfortable. Or it's just walking on the street. I think I've told this story before. I'm walking with a friend of mine and we're shooting the breeze. And this dog comes running up to me, like literally running up to me. And his first, and he's an MD, by the way, a medical doctor. His patients don't run up to him and give a big hug. And this dog comes running up to me, jumping on me, like, you know, pick me up, pick me up. It was a little like a Bichon kind of little dog. And he goes to me, he says, is this one of your patients? I said, I've never seen this dog before. I have no idea who it is. So anyway. No, it says, my dog loves you and he hates the vet he's met before. It's so weird. I mean, look, I'm thrilled because it's so funny that in every business, you have business people, right? And there's a whole practice management association. You could be a board certified veterinary practice manager, okay? It's a specialty. So anyway, they say a veterinarian should never walk out into the waiting room. Now, they're looking at purely from the business side. In other words, every time you walk out, people, oh, Dr. Robert, Dr. Robert, Dr. They want to get you. It's holding you back. They look at it as you're losing money. You should be in the exam room and generating income. And I say, to heck with that. I walk out into a crowded waiting room and my patients come running over to me and jumping up on me and wagging their tails and licking my face, right? That is the best PR you can possibly for that brand new client that's sitting there, has never met me and been to other vets. Their other vets aren't doing this. And they see how these dogs respond to me. I don't have to advertise anything. It's the best thing ever. Not to mention for me, talk about the joy and the satisfaction you get. Yeah, that's why they say, you know, dogs just help our health. That reaction, that bond is really good for both of us. And I know it's the best thing ever. Elmer with Akita, Uzi, 35 years, your client. Uzi's 7 and 130 pounds. I started giving some extra bone supplement. You know, I would. First of all, these dogs, by the way, are gorgeous. And, you know, Akitas can be tough dogs. And I have to tell you that Elmer's dogs are always the most amazing, sweetest dogs. They may not be with other people, but they're pretty good with me. Yeah, absolutely. I would do a chondroitin supplement with glucosamine, with MSM, 100%. If they're already starting to slow down, it wouldn't be a bad idea at 7 years of age or almost 7. But, you know, he's a big boy, 130 pounds is a big dog. It wouldn't be a bad idea when we do his senior physical, which is at 7 years of age. We should take some x-rays also because I want to know what his back looks like. I want to know what his hips look like. I mean, it's very important because this is the time we can also start the good supplements. And there are things that are really good other than just the supplements. Now, if everything looks great, and Akitas aren't really known for terrible hip dysplasia, but if everything else is good, I'm great with just chondroitin, glucosamine, MSM, stuff like that, maybe some cold laser therapy. But if we do have some evidence of arthritis, then other things like the non-steroidal anti-inflammatories might be wise also. And of course, if there's pain, which I don't think you'd be calling me already if there were pain, then that new Librela shot has been working really, really well. When Jay was hit by a car and ER docs couldn't even get accurate x-rays the next day, seeing you for the first time, he knew he was going to, thank you very much. Yeah, that's, well, it is. I really think it's how we handle them. Same thing with cats. Actually, cats even more so. And that is, there's a way. Cats are even better at it. That's another one I've heard that I'll be sitting, now, it could be because the cat's afraid and they feel comfortable just being snug. Because remember, when you have a cat that's in a foreign place, like a veterinary exam room, they don't know the hiding places. They don't know when they're at their house and a stranger comes over and they make a beeline, right? They know exactly where to go, where they're safe. But when they're in a strange person's office, a small room, they have no idea. So when they're cuddled and they're being held, it's almost like they freeze. And that's what the behaviors told me. I like to think that they're comfortable being held because they're not trying to get away from me. Even if they were frozen, I could see if they were frozen in mom's or dad's hands. But in a stranger, and they just sit there and they put their head down and they're purring away. I just think it's an energy. And I don't know. You know, the truth is, I don't care what the underlying reason is. All I know is that they're comfortable. They don't fight. They let me examine them. And it's like, you know, one of the things we always say, where's the best place to examine a cat? And the answer, wherever he or she wants to be. If it wants to be in my arms, it's in my arms. If it wants to be in mom or dad's lap, it's going to be on their lap. Sometimes putting on that table, even with the blanket and the warmth and all that, and the feel away spray and, you know, all those things we do to try to calm them down. If they don't want to be there, they're not going to want to be there, period. And cats, again, I say all the time, I would faster work with that nasty Chow Chow, Rottweiler, Akita, Doberman, all those breeds that are known to be kind of a great pit bull, even though pitties are the best for doctors anyway. But I would rather work with an aggressive dog over an aggressive cat any day of the week. Because those cats, man, first of all, they're using all four legs. They have claws. They are so fast. And if I'm going to be bitten by an animal, I'd rather be bitten by a dog than a cat. Because dog bites, little soap and water, I'm done. Cat bite, oh my God. They got some pretty nasty mouths. So in general, give me a tough dog any day of the week. I love working with those tough cats because they're usually pretty good. All right. Oh, Bethany, you're finally here. This is my sister, and she's usually one of the first ones on. Steve, my brother-in-law, and Sandy was out for boarding in a week. She has UTI and was prescribed antibiotics. Any additional care for the handle it? Ah, good question. So first of all, UTIs are not contagious, all right? A URI, upper respiratory infection, yes. Urinary tract infection, no. So if she's on antibiotics and doing well, then life goes on. Even if a dog licks her pee, that's not going to turn into an infection. So just let the handler know that she may want to drink a little bit more water than normally. She may urinate a little bit more than normally. It depends on what phase she's on. Now, if she's on boarding, she's going for a week. How long has she been on the antibiotics? If it's been at least 5 or 6 days already, and they were the right antibiotics, I don't know if they did a culture or whatever, that should be fine. So I don't think it's a problem. As long as the daycare facility or the boarding facility is adept at giving medication, and as long as she's good with it, then it should be zero issue. The place I recommend most of them, because a lot of dogs are on chronic medication, not for something that's contagious, not for making them really sick, but it might be a supplement or it might be a medication for whatever. Most of these places can give medication. Alon, tomorrow's Chase will be getting a wart in his paw. Does it need to be stitches? You know, from the pictures you sent me, I would probably put in a stitch or two. I'm not worried about it. It looks pretty benign to me. But I think to get it all cosmetically, we might want to put a stitch or two in, but it's not going to be a huge deal anyway. And remember, Alon, no food or water after midnight tonight. All right, now I'm going to go to another thing I wanted to read. Oh, this is also really cute. It turns out, and if you ever watch this, if you have dogs and cats as we do, then you can see this. So dogs basically have a sense of their bodies, their height, their width. If there's a space that they have to go through, they will know that they can fit most of the time. And if it's too narrow for them, they won't do it. Or they may put their head in, and as soon as they start pushing on their cheeks, they back away. Cats, they can sense the narrowness, but they don't judge height. So in other words, or it's the opposite. They always think they can slink up and fit into a place, but if it's too short for them, they won't try. It's very fascinating. And the other day in my office, actually, this exactly what happened. So I have an exam table, and it's also like a cabinet too. So it's not just a table. So it's the whole unit. And it's up against the wall. It's literally, I don't know, this far. I mean, it's so this is a cat in the room. And because the height was there, it's from the floor to ceiling, it's the same thing. So he says, oh, this is a no-brainer. And he somehow squeezed his way in there. And he was stuck. He could not turn around. He could not back up. It was the funniest thing. I had to move the whole table away from the wall so we can get him out. But it was really cute because I just read this about the cat's ability. They always feel they can get through any skinny space, but the only thing that's going to stop them is if it's too low or too high. And if it's too low for them to fit, they won't even try. So anyway, I just thought, Adam Christman is with us today. Adam, you must have some good questions for me. He is, by the way, a phenomenal veterinarian, known each other for a long time. You should follow him on Instagram. He's all over the place. And what a wonderful guy. So yeah, Adam, anything new and exciting you want to share or talk to us about or good questions that you've seen from your patients, that would be great. This is the vehicle to do it on. This is great and people love it. And another thing I wanted to talk about, maybe it's also good to have another veterinarian here, especially one that I adore. And that is, I made some notes because I've had a couple of cases lately. And of course, we'll stop if someone has a good question. We can, you know, this is just philosophical stuff. In fact, you know what I may want to do? Because I know we have to have commercial time for Pet Life Radio. So why don't we break for a second, let Mark run his commercials here for us, and then we'll come back and we're going to get a little philosophical. Don't go away.
Gifts for my pets. Sparkle and love under the tree from heaven above. Gifts for my pets, joy in the air, unwrapping dreams without a care.
Elevate your cat's eating experience with the Cat Tree Tray. The Cat Tree Tray keeps your cat's food off the floor and is conveniently located on the cat tree. Go to cattreetray.com. Bring home a luxury French bulldog from the world-famous Tom King's Kennel. Premium French bulldogs from excellent European bloodlines. Superior puppy care and lifetime health guarantee for your perfect companion. Use code TOMKINGSMAGIC for a magical holiday discount. Visit TomKingsKennel.com and find your perfect Frenchie today. Your pets will be over the moon with sparkly jewelry from Over the Moon Jewelry. Beautiful handcrafted matching jewelry for you and your pet. Wire-wrapped, beaded contemporary necklaces, bracelets, and charms. Go to OverTheMoonJewelry.com.
Gifts for my pets.
joy in the air, unwrapping dreams without a care.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
We are back live. Thanks for joining me back here. So a question came in, how can kidney stones be removed without blood? Now, do we mean they're not causing bleeding, or you would like to do it without any kind of surgery where there's going to be no bleeding? So you can just let me know what you mean by without kidney stones without blood. So anyway, if we are worried about them, if they're too large, if they're causing pain or discomfort, still in my book, it's going to be surgery. Now, there may be some laparoscopic surgeries that are able. I don't know. I don't do laparoscopic surgery. I'm a good old-fashioned surgeon, and I will go in and take them. Dogs and cats both do very, very well after surgery. We can make it rather small. We have this device, spoons, that we can go in and get all the crystals out. I've never really had issues postoperatively. I've never said routine. I never tell anybody think that a surgical procedure is routine, that there are never complications. There's sometimes unpredictable complications, and we won't know until we get there and do it. But yes, there's always a risk. The anesthesia itself, you never know if that animal's going to have a weird reaction. And just in general, you have to know that. But just like those commercials on TV with these drugs, you know, at the very end of the commercial, hey, it can kill you. And how many millions and millions of people are taking it, even though, because three people in the study out of 3 million died, they didn't even know for sure if it was from the med, but they died during the study, then it can say it can kill you. So I'm a surgery kind of guy. So if I have a lot of stones, I don't want to wait for the diet, even if you're on the right track, to dissolve all the stones. And if it's a male, I'm actually afraid sometimes, because if they get to the too small a point where they can get out of the bladder, now they might lodge someplace else in the urethra. So again, let me know, Josiah, what you mean though without blood. If you mean they're not causing any clinical problem, there's no excessive water drinking, there's no excessive, first of all, you didn't tell me whether it's a dog or a cat. Excessive urinating, trips to the litter box of a cat where there's stress, where there's obviously discomfort, then I think it's time to remove them. Now, sometimes I'll put them on a diet first, especially if it's a female, and see if we do any good. We'll go on to a stone dissolving diet. There are a number out there. And if it's a screwvite stone or if it's a calcium oxalate stone, it might be able to shrink it down and play it by ear. Now, oxalate stones, they can be very irritating to a bladder wall, especially when the bladder is trying to push and empty out the urine. And it's like taking sandpaper on the inside of a bladder wall and rubbing it. That's pretty uncomfortable for the cat or the dog. So I lean sometimes, depending on the number and their size, stop kidding around it. Now, if they're very, very small crystals and you can see them there and you take the ultrasound probe, you see them, oh, diet first, of course. I'm always going to try diet first. Let's see if we can dissolve them, see what happens. But of course, we're going to do your analysis and see what we find. But otherwise, I'm going to be a fan. If they're large and multiple, I'm going to recommend surgery. All right. If you're still there, Adam, what do you think? Send me a little note here. Do you walk out into a crowded waiting room when you're seeing patients? That's what I want to know. For me, I don't know if you heard my answer was, even though some of the big practice management people who preceded us said never, 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 I do it all the time. I love it. I love the energy. I think clients love the energy. And it's good for other people to see how much my patients love coming to see me. Unlike a kid going to a pediatrician's office, I asked a kid the other day, came in with mom. Now, I don't wear white shirt, white coats anymore, and a stethoscope. I walk into a room with a kid and they start to cry. I pity pediatricians. They have no fun. At least I have a blast every day. But, you know, I asked the kid, I said, I gave the dog a shot. The dog was just great. And it was like, so I go and I just kidding around. I say to the kid, so is it your turn? You want your shot now? He goes, no. So anyway, there's a big difference between pediatricians and veterinarians. Yes, we can't, you know, we have to deal with mom and dad. We can't really communicate directly with the patient. But I think that my patients have much more fun than a kid going to the doctor. So anyway, one of the things I wanted to get to is water intake almost as much as they want. We have to try to dissolve them. Depending on the stones, there is one called SD. It's a stone dissolving diet. There's also urinary SO by Royal Canin. There are, I think Purina might have also a stone. The whole idea is that we're trying to change the urinary pH, the acid, because some of these stones do better in an acidic they do better in the sense that they start dissolving in an acid urine. If the urine is much above 7.5 or even 8, then we could start seeing stones. So we want to get that urine pH down. Now, there are other stones that seem to thrive in an acidic urine. So there you want to, that's why it's important as possible to try to find out what stones are. The most common stones probably are going to be your struvite, which is calcium ammonium phosphate, or they call triple phosphate crystals or stones. And the next ones will be the calcium oxalate stones. Those are the ones that are very rough on the edges, little spicules coming out. Those are the ones that I think cause some damage to the inside of a bladder. Then you have your stones like Dalmatians get their stones, and we have to put them on allopurinol, a medication to help dissolve them. There, it's a little different. So that's why the stones get. But I always recommend a couple of things. When your doctor is going to remove stones out of a dog or a cat, it's good to do what's called a crystallographic analysis and a culture. Because sometimes what will happen is you can culture the urine and it'll be negative, but you culture the stone. And in the center of that stone, you pick up bacteria. And then you want to put those animals on the appropriate antibiotic. We do then a culture and go from there. So Bettina, that's where we just talked about the importance of, it's better to know. Now, if you're going with the odds are that most animals that are not Dalmatians, okay, are going to, those are ones that get the what's called urate stones. But if we're dealing with a normal dog, in order of popularity, commonality, most common are going to be your struvite, then comes your calcium oxalate. So you make your decision based on that. For me, it's more, of course, it's that, knowing they're there. I want to know how many. I want to know the size, the sex of the animal, the condition of the animal, and realistically, how good is that diet going to really help? You know, I'll tell you what, I'm going to give you something to think about. And when we come back next week, I want to know your feelings. So, and I'm talking some serious stuff here, and that is with what's going on in the veterinary industry. And I don't want to get into the discussion of why. I have my reasons. I'm happy to share them with you, but corporate America, and I don't know if you're still on, Adam, but if you are, we'd love your throwing your input in this as well. But why has it gotten so crazy expensive? Yes, of course, cost of employees have gone up, cost of materials, supplies, drugs have gone up. But I mean, to the point of exploding, I have to say, and you know, shoot me if I'm wrong, but it's corporate America. These corporations have taken over many of the practices. I don't know what the number is. Adam, if you're still there, you might know. 50%, maybe 40% of practices across the country are now corporate owned. It might even be higher. And yes, I'm going to say it anyway. The bottom line of these corporate practices is the bottom line. That's what matters to the most. And the prices have gone astronomically high. So now if I have to send an animal to a specialty group for a specialty surgery or a specialty diagnostic workup or something that I just don't do, at my own practice as a general practitioner, then I have a client just spent in the course of 4 days, $10,000, and the cat died anyway. I even said to them, you got to put the brakes on at some point. If you have to spend that kind of money on diagnostics, because the basic diagnostics have not helped you at all. So now you're looking at some esoteric, weird tests that you have to do that cost hundreds of dollars a test. I can only tell you, whatever you're spending on that, once you even found out the diagnosis, it's most likely going to be not treatable, or it's going to cost you even more to treat it. If you have a brain lesion, something going on in the brain, you can tell neurologically, and the neurologist says, oh no, this cuts down to like an encephalitis, some sort of brain mass, you do the MRI, or you do the CT, and you see something there, okay? Trust me, not an easy treatment. It's not going to go away. So now you have to think, well, how are you going to get it? You can do brain surgery? So my question to you is, at what point do we have to say, you know what? Quality of life is more important. At what point do you say, I'd love to do it, and I hope you don't think I'm a bad person, doc, but I just can't afford it. That is okay. Not everybody is driving around in Ferraris and Lamborghinis and Bentleys and Rolls and Porsches. They found their Toyota or their Hyundai or their Kia and are very, very, very happy. In fact, I'm even thinking about, I have a Tesla now and I'm thinking, you know, my lease is up. I love the car. I hate Tesla, the company. They've been not good for customer service. And I love that Ioniq 6. I think it's cool looking. I'm going to look at some others also, but it's way less than I'm paying. And it's a really cool looking car. And I've already talked to a few people that have them and they love them. So I'm not proud. I love the looks of the car. It looks like a spaceship. I'm happy. So anyway, sometimes it's okay that dollars and cents has to come into the equation. It is totally fine. You don't feel guilty. You do what you can. You do the best you can. And when you get to the point where the reasonable cost of treatment that we employ no longer works, and now you're faced with that next level, but you just can't do it, you can't feel guilty because you did the best you could. And that's how I say. And another thing is, how far, what do you want to put the pet through, yourself through emotionally, and yourself through financially to treat certain cancers? It can get very, very costly. It's not a cakewalk for the patient either. Oh, do they go through what the humans go through? No. We don't get them that high a doses and that high a treatment where they get sick and they're hospitalized and they're vomiting like crazy and their hair is falling out. We try to avoid that as veterinarians because we know that the end game is going to be pretty short anyway because it usually happens when they're older. So, and if it happens when they're very young, they're usually very aggressive. And I've had recent cases where a couple of them where very, very young animals got horrendous cancers. And it is very, very sad. But poop happens. It just happens sometimes. But I will tell you this, and something to think about, that when these people have gone through major cancer treatment with a pet, and then years later, they have another pet, and they're faced with the same decisions about a cancer. No, doc, been there, done that. It was not pretty. It was tough. It was tough on us. It was tough on the pet. And I don't want to go through it again. That's fair. That's fair. Sometimes you got to do it to know what it's like, and you have to feel good. You have to feel good about your decision. And even if money wasn't the limiting factor, even if you had plenty of money and you drive your fancy car and you can afford it, or you have pet insurance that's going to cover, whatever the case may be, it's still okay to sit back and say, is it really the best for the pet? So I'm going to leave you with that. Would love your thoughts. Next week, we come back and we'll talk about stuff like this. And, would love pet insurance. Yes, Janice, you're right. Pet insurance is going crazy. We can talk about that. I have my alternative to pet insurance. You may want to know it. You may not, but I think it's pretty good. And JB, next week, would you please remind me? We're going to talk about that because that's a great thing to talk about, is my feelings about pet insurance as a veterinarian, what I'm seeing, what the hoops that we have to go through to try to prove that this is not a pre-existing condition, that the warts, or which is the little virus that the dog had on its mouth as a puppy, is going to prevent any growth in the skin forever, right? That's BS. And yes, that's what they're trying to do. Ooh, oh no, we saw when he was 4 months old, he had an oral papilloma. Well, that's a virus. That's not a disease. And yet that's going to limit any skin tumor for the rest of their life. Then they're getting away with murder at your expense. So we'll get back to that next week here on Pet Life Radio, Ask the Vets with Dr. Jeff, here on Instagram Live. Thank you so much for joining me. Have a wonderful week, and we'll see you here next week. And love the questions, so have them coming. Yeah, during the week, by the way, ask me questions during the week. You can reach me, Dr. Jeff at PetLifeRadio.com, Jeff at AirBet.com, here on Instagram. Just send me at Werbs_DVM. Tell your friends to follow me too, at Werbs_DVM. And I love to help them with their pet's problems, even if they're not my client. So just let them know. All right, see you next week. Bye-bye.
Let's Talk Pets. Every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.